And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 845. We're going to talk about something that maybe people talk about in fantasy. I don't know. Seems like a popular topic. Closers, bullpens around fantasy baseball. Always a wild time. And in order to help me break down all 30 teams, it's been a while since we've had him on Benched with Bubba. He's a busy, busy man. And I get the luxury of seeing him at First Pitch Arizona nearly every year, which is always great. He is the owner of Reliever Recon, the best $5 in Patreon you could ever spend. Owner of Closer Monkey as well. You can find him on Twitter at GJewett9. Greg Jewett, how you doing, my friend?
I'm busy but well. How are you?
Doing well. Doing well. It's another baseball season's upon us. It's only been like a week and a half, 2 weeks now, but it feels like it's already been a lot longer the way things have gotten going. So how are things going in the Reliever Recon Closer Monkey world?
Well, as we discussed off air, I really don't have a hard time finding a topic on a daily basis. It's been a whirlwind. Business is good. So all this chaos just makes sure that me and all of the other save chaser content people have plenty to write about.
Yes, that is for sure. If you want, feel free to plug what you got going on over there to see if let people know what's happening. Because I enjoy the emails and all the other good stuff. So I've been a member for a long time, but for those three people that aren't members, let them know.
Yeah, we appreciate that. There's different levels here. So Reliever Recon it's obviously closer focused, but we also have my friend Will does the daily stream. So people that are in head-to-head leagues, he tries to identify the guys who might get you vulture wins. We both split duties. I give ideas for vulture saves and he comes up with someone on his own. He does a great job with that. Aaron does the rankings every Sunday or Monday, whichever day he can get to it, because he knows the least favorite thing I have in fantasy is rankings. I publish them and then an hour later, it's like, you're back to the drawing board. But be that as it may, it's more NFBC, I would say slanted. Does that make sense?
Yes, 100%.
Most of my content, we do a Fab Five every Sunday, try and identify relievers for both overall contests. I do want it on record. I did not have Mark Leiter Jr. in any of my recommendations in the top five for either format. Just putting that out there. I saw a lot of people. I was texting the guys as soon as it came out. I'm like, have you seen these Leiter Jr. bids? I don't know who was hyping Mark Leiter Jr., but we were not among them. I mean, I put him in like the save streamers. I'm like, if you have to, but I don't love his matchups in both New York cities. Anyways, I digress. And the closer charts, you get access to those, which update daily, mostly hourly when games are happening. So you can see it in real time. So like when Colwyn's getting a save today, you get to see my immediate thoughts when it's happening and not wait till the next day when it publishes on other sites. So those are just the advantages you get. We have different highlighted colors on there and all those things. I see Bubba's mug up there every so often when I'm in there updating things. So it's cool to do. And I do have to say thank you for the kind words. And I also highly recommend your and Ryan's Patreon as well. You're giving me all kinds of different ideas with these different charts you're coming up with and other things. It's cool stuff. But anyways, so Closer Monkey is more for the Yahoo, CBS, ESPN. You know, I update the stuff every morning. You do have to, if you're not a premium subscriber, you have to chew through the Google ads, which I feel like sometimes are a little bit overwhelming. I don't love it, but that's what keeps the lights on at Closer Monkey. And then the premium people get the ad-free content in a separate Substack. And let's see. Oh, there'll be an article tomorrow. Those are once a week on The Athletic for their bullpen review. So that'll be, once I get done with this, I can start prepping some of that to turn in for that posting. And then my first article at Baseball HQ will be up on Friday with the lineups outlook, just kind of going through what players might be gaining or losing value based on where they're nestling in the lineups. With almost 2 weeks in, we have a little better idea. So that's why Brent and I decided to hold off on getting those going too soon. But that's a fun one because I actually get a break from pitchers and I can actually see what some hitters are doing around the world.
Yep. No, it's awesome. Yeah, Greg's always doing a ton of great stuff. You throw in the HQ, which I get to read all the time as a member and a writer at HQ, and then you got The Athletic as well. So always good stuff. And then I do like how you split it up, because the NFPC slant, that's kind of what Ryan and I stuff is. So like, I get what you're saying there. Mm-hmm. But you also try to cater to the other CBS's, Yahoo's of the world when you can. So totally get it. And you have it all covered. And you know what? Sometimes people just have to navigate through the tea leaves, because it's, in the end, just pure chaos out there. But we will get to closers very shortly. A couple bits of news that have dropped in the last, 18, 24 hours. Cole Reagans left his start on Wednesday. Jose Ramirez hit a comebacker, hit him in the pitching hand. Apparently, it was right above the wrist, kind of the softest part of the hand. It was immediate swelling, so that's why he couldn't grip the ball, left the game. But so far, x-rays are negative. Greg, we know x-rays aren't the end-all, be-all. There's swelling involved. But for now, they're optimistic. We don't have a whole lot of takeaway here. If you have anything on this, you're more than welcome to. But just letting listeners know, Reagans is day-to-day at the moment.
You mean teams lie? No way.
No, Dr. Dave would never. So we'll see how that goes. The Astros pitching staff, trouble. We already got Hunter Brown out probably till June with his shoulder injury. Now Christian Javier left his start on Wednesday with right shoulder stiffness. He was already struggling to start the season. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you got any thoughts on this one, Greg. Is there any Houston pitchers? There's the Arigettis of the world. There's a handful of others. They're going to need – they wanted to do a six-man rotation. That's almost impossible now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Arigetti's like the old Forrest Gump thing. He's like a box of chocolates. You just don't know what each start's going to give you. But, there's days he'll strike out eight, and you're like, oh, my God, this guy's the next coming, and then the next game he walks six and you're like, what the hell was I thinking? So if you can manage his outings, I think that can help. And a lot of us are going to be starting to live on some of these stream things. I mean, you're losing people. I lost Hunter Brown and Tout. You have to start adjusting on the fly. Now, luckily I have a couple of people that were injured that might return. I'm hoping Wheeler can find a little velocity before they activate him, but he would be somebody that at least I would have a bridge to. Instead of locking him in with Hunter Brown, now I got to hope he can come in and give me some production while he's sidelined. So you just have to start slotting these things up and thinking a week or two in advance. You don't want to be chasing all of the two-star people when everybody's chasing them if you want to try and get them on the cheap. So those are hard things to do. And I've been very critical of Joe Espada on how he's been using his relievers. I mean, I broke it down last year how he didn't give Hader enough time in between his multiple inning outings. I mean, when you got a reliever throwing two innings and north of 30 pitches, you need two full days off. And he was bringing them back on one day's rest and things of that nature. I mean, the whole reason Josh Hader had the Hader rules before he was a free agent was to avoid that. You can't run the poor guy into the ground and then expect him to just keep out there and doing it. I mean, his last outing was a two inning outing against the Yankees. I mean, that's his shoulder just buckled. We're all human. And I think Abreu's early struggles are the result of, and it wasn't all Espada, but three straight years of 70 plus appearances. And again, not giving enough rest in between some of these elongated outings. When these pitch counts elevate, it's hard. And even what he let Hunter Brown throw 102 pitches on opening day. What are we doing?
Yep. No one was stretched out to that. That's a great point. And this is why, again, folks, I'm going to say it a lot. Reliever recon, everything is really awesome, because Greg digs into so many more things and just like, hey, this guy got the day off, or this guy pitched like there's the depth of just the pitch counts, the this and that. It's very, very useful. So I'm telling you, I would not have thought about that. But then you throw, when you mention 102 pitches on opening day, like no pitcher really throws past like 65 probably by their last spring.
Everybody's
start,
on so. Pitch counts. It's like, yeah, it's cool. He trusted them and leaned into them. But at the same token, you're like, it's day one. Ease into this a little.
Yeah, it's like I was nervous watching my Giants last night, and Robbie Ray threw 109 pitches, and it's like it's his second start, maybe third. And I'm still just like, yeah, are we really doing this already? Like, I'm still not wondering if that's a great idea, but time will tell.
Desperation's a stinky cologne.
Very much. It's desperate times for sure. We had a brouhaha, a brawl in Anaheim on Tuesday night. I was getting ready for the podcast. I had the game on TV. And I just looked up when I saw Soler run to the mound. I'm like, that's a big boy that you don't want to be on the other side of. He got suspended 7 games for trying to fight Ronaldo Lopez. Ronaldo Lopez connected with the baseball in his hand. He already got it rescinded down to 5 games. He started serving it today. I'm just going to ask you, because there's not a whole lot we can do about this. They just got suspended. It is what it is. You're a hockey guy. thoughts on how this goes, because most people make fun of like baseball fights because, you know, why is the bullpen running out? Most guys never connect on anything. You know, there was a great hockey fight. I enjoy hockey, not like you are much more into it than I am, but I forget the guy's name, the guy that took out Austin Matthews for the season. He wore it. He was injured and said, I'm going to play in the game. I'm going to get my butt kicked, and then I'm going to leave the game. Like, it's just a different environment in hockey.
It is, yeah.
The heck out of it. So what was your thought of this fight?
I mean, it feels like this has been brewing with Soler and him. So they were teammates, but they must not have gotten along. And then he kind of owns them, hit the home run. And we all know Jorge can pimp it a little bit. So, Soler came out there with intent. Ronaldo's lucky he missed that initial thrust, because if that had landed, he would have probably had more than 5 days off. That could have broken his jaw. So, like the hockey guys, some of that's planned. So it's like, they talk about it a shift before the game. And then, that's what their role is on the team. I mean, these guys going out there, we could lose somebody. I mean, we've seen people get lost in the pile hurting their shoulder. You don't want to see anybody getting tackled, rolled around, things of that nature. So just a different thing. You would almost wish he would just wait for him in the parking lot and they could have just settled it there. But, fighting just it's difficult. Like the first time my son got into a thing where they were throwing mitts, they had the cages on, but he was like 16 with an 18-year-old. You get nervous. It's like, that's my kid out there. But it's different watching these major leaguers. But yeah, it's, I don't know. It is silly when they all run in and all that stuff. I wish there would, if you make a rule where if you leave a certain area, then you can be suspended, then you would cut down a lot of that stuff. I mean, if you want to eliminate all of that hullabaloo and the showing and the talking, you just make stricter rules. You leave X, then this is Y. And then people will be like, okay, I don't need to run out there and show that I'm backing up my teammates.
Yep, just like the NBA. You leave the bench, you're automatically suspended. It changes things a little bit more, a lot quicker. All right, a couple more here. Shane Smith was sent to AAA on Wednesday morning, the opening day starter for the White Sox. It's been a rough go. An inning and two-thirds, three earned on opening day. Three innings, seven earned in his second start. He went 3 2/3, did not allow a run on Tuesday, but walked 5 and struck out 8. This kind of feels like it's a mechanical thing, potentially, with Shane Smith. Could be totally wrong. Greg, maybe you've seen something else, but I feel like we'll be seeing Shane Smith sooner than later once he figures things out.
I hope so. I took him in TGFBI, thinking I was getting a number one starter on a team on the rise. And I was like, okay, at the worst, he'll give me some strikeouts and quality outings. And I know James Anderson at RotoWire likes him. So it's like, okay, well, if James likes him, then I can get on board with it. Not that I want to be a sheep to anybody, but he's a pretty sharp guy. So, fortunately, that's the only share I have of him, so I can kind of weather the storm. But it's frustrating. So yeah, we're hoping to go down to AAA, work out a couple of things, maybe watch some, you get down there, you can clear your head, watch some video, see what you're doing last year versus this year, clean that up, clean up the mechanical tweaks that you have to do, and then he can come back and restabilize at the front of that rotation. And the White Sox are another team that's causing frustration for reliever people, but we'll get to that later.
Yep. And last bit of news I have here, just really not fantasy related at this point in time, but Victor Robles heads to the IL. Connor Joe got recalled. Connor Joe got the start on Wednesday. He will play versus left-handed pitching. That's the only time Victor Robles played these days. So just something to keep in mind as we go forward. All right, now to the main event of the evening. Let's talk closers. I do this in the preseason a couple different times, and I think it's really good to do here. As I mentioned, you are tracking so much of this stuff already, and half of it still might be up in the air. We really don't know where it's going, but maybe we can get inclinations and whatnot. So we're going to go team by team, give our thoughts on closers. But first, before we do that, I just want to get your general thought and strategies, because, in the draft season, some people say you need to pay for closing. Some people say you don't. You can work the waiver wire. You obviously know the ins and outs of a lot of the closing situations. How do you usually approach closing, and how do you, see it going this year for fantasy? Is it going to be just an up and down all season, or does it look like it hopefully, gets calm again?
I don't know that we're going to get the stable waters that we're hoping for. I was a little different because in the last couple of years, especially when I was in like my main event drafts, I was stubborn. I'm like, oh, I can find saves. It's what I do on a day-to-day basis. And it was so frustrating. I did not do a main event this year. I took a year off. I was a little disappointed with how I performed last year. I think my team came in sixth. I was not happy. After winning my first one, do you know that, you know, when King Curlin got his moniker, I actually won that league.
I remember that because trust me,
I led for all of, I think, 18 hours.
Yeah. No,
I tracked him down. He had some injuries and he had a very good team. I mean, at one point, I mean, he was on track to run away with things. And then he suffered some untimely injuries. Things kind of went awry and I just kept gobbling up at one of the guys at Recon, Don Rello. At first he's like, you got no chance. And then he's like, I think a week before the season was over, he's like, holy crap, you might catch him, you know, because he was watching it too. He was just trying to see, because I was like, I'm going to track him down. I got lucky partially, but yeah, Mike's a great guy. I haven't seen him since that point, but yeah, I know he would be a good sport about it. But I kind of laid low, but a lot of it depended on draft position, like where you were. 12 and 15s are different animals, but in a 15er, if you weren't at like the top four picks, you really had to reach to get one if you were going to take one that early in the second round. I know people really wanted a starting pitcher or a hitter at that point. So now you're coming around to the third, so then you can kind of let drift to the fourth. But then there was like a cutoff, and it's like, if I don't get somebody by the time Chapman goes, then I'm kind of winging it. So it really amplified and pushed up the prices this year. We'll see if they were justified or not. You know, the biggest winners, I really don't have a read on Hader. They say he's going to face hitters next week. I mean, with Abreu imploding, the biggest winners in all this could be the folks that took Hader. If he comes back with any sort of semblance of health or reasonable velocity to what he had before, he might end up being the draft day steal. He could still be an absolute bust if he can't make it back on the field this year. We there's no assurances. But the way all that happened, I mean, some of the prices just got bananas when you saw Sir Anthony moving way up and other people. I was like, there was a point where I was willing to take them, and then I was like, all right, I'll wait. And I got some late shares of Seawald and some other people. I was like, I'll just tread water until Puck comes back and things of that nature. I think either crowd can make the argument that they did it right. So like, if you're saying I never pay for saves and you picked up Romano on the first week of the season and you've been streaming in some other people, you picked up Jacob Junis when the rest of your league was sleeping. You're going to be like, ha, see, I told you. So it's all how you build that team. And the biggest thing for me is I think people need to play to their strengths. If you don't want to fab relievers all year, then go get your guy. And then you can kind of get a mid-tier guy and hope he moves up, and then you'll just kind of monitor the waters. But if you're comfortable doing all those things, you can let it drift and then see what happens. But it's just hard to hit those numbers. What I'm really fascinated by this year will be what the 80th and 90th percentiles end up being in like the main event OCs. They trended down a little last year. I just don't know, because the hardest thing is going to be is, okay, well, I got these guys, but can you capture those saves? I mean, everybody was taking victory laps after Ryan Stanek weekend, and he hasn't had the ninth inning since. So, yep. You know, and I wrote with trepidation. I was like, you can add Stanek. I just don't trust the profile. I couldn't justify going triple digits on Ryan Stanek on that week. And that's just part of the things that I share at Recon. I'm not going to fluff a guy just to say, because everyone's going to go get him. I'm going to give you my feelings and say, I'm hesitant about this.
Yeah, no, I agree completely. It's the biggest thing is, do whatever works for you is kind of the deal. If you like to draft them, fine. If you want to fab them, fine. The hardest part is fabbing the right ones. Like, yes, Romano's worked out well. Be curious to see what Junis does this weekend, and we'll talk about that situation in Texas. But yeah, the Stanics of the world, Gregory Soto, we'll talk about that. Like, there's been a lot of guys going that they're not the 100% guy potentially. So,
right.
Or not at all in Stanic's case. And we'll have to see how that goes as well. All right, we'll start with the AL East. The Boston Red Sox, this seems pretty simple. Aroldis Chapman's got the gig as long as he can. He did throw a fastball very slow last night, which was kind of interesting.
It was cold. I'll give him it was cold. Now, it didn't happen. But Chapman was warming up for the eighth inning today. to face the top of the Brewers lineup. So it was shared by Chris Cotillo on Twitter. I still won't call it X. It's so, you know, he's still going to get the majority of saves, but, and Whitlock would have been unavailable. So that means it probably would have been Justin Slayton today if they didn't add on to their lead. So he's going to get, you know, 65 to 75% of them, but at the same token, there's going to be games. So if you can kind of see the lineups on the week ahead, and if they're playing two teams with like heavy left-handed lineups, you might be able to squeeze out a Whitlock save and things of that nature. So just keep that in mind. But yes, unless his velocity falls off a cliff, and we do have to remember he's 38. I mean, I know he's in great shape. He keeps his body together, but we all hit the wall at some point. And you know, he wouldn't be the first age 38 reliever to see a reduction in his velocity. And that's just something, again, I'm going to give him a little bit of pass, but it was down in the spring, which we can look the other way, but it's still down when the lights went green. You know, these guys all say they need that juice to get going. So once he moves to a warmer weather game and if it's still sitting at that level, now we got to pay more attention.
Good point. Very good point. New York Yankees, David Bednar, it's not always been clean, but he's been getting the saves. You still got Duvall in town and a few others, but it seems like it's Bednar's role for the time being.
It is. We got to watch that whip. His whip's over two right now, and that's not what we want from our closer. Now, he's been able to find a way, but even in the spring outings, his swinging strike percentages were down. I don't know if it's just the way he's sequencing his pitches or what's going on. Just something we need to monitor. I mean, at this time last year, he was in AAA.
Yep, exactly. Exactly. That's
and that part. Bullpen, like, yeah, that bullpen is an Achilles heel as far as depth.
You'd imagine Duvall's next man up, or do they maybe go somewhere else?
Well, there? I mean, there was a day his sinker just looked demonic, and I'm like, oh my God, this is fantastic. And then he went right back to being Duvall the week after and gave up two earned runs, I think, in his next two outings. So, you know as well as anybody that
I've lived that roller coaster.
And every time you believe in him, then he's like, haha. So yep. I don't know. And Fernando Cruz is the same thing. There's days where he can strike out the side, and there's days he can walk the bases loaded. You don't know what's going to happen. That's why I'm saying at some point the Yankees are going to have to address the situation. If they're going to be World Series contenders when all of these relievers hit the trade block, they're going to have to be very aggressive.
Be interesting to see how that plays out. Because, yeah, that's how they got Bednar, Duvall and company last year. So.
And Bednar's a free agent at the end of the year.
Good point. And it was something I talked to Ryan about, and I mentioned it a few other times, and I notice it a lot when I write my HQ articles, is so many of the hard throwers, quote-unquote, future back-end bullpen arms, they all have control issues. They're all like Duvall, it feels like a majority of them. So eventually some figure it out, don't get me wrong, but a lot of them have some massive control issues.
Yeah, I think at some point you're either going to see Heel or that LaGrange kid in the bullpen who they all keep comparing to Dellin Betances because of the similar frames and high velocity arsenal. So, yeah, I think one of those two is going to get pushed in there sooner or later. Now, again, they can do this. They can backfill, because if Ryan Weathers has to transition into a high velocity left-handed leverage reliever, they can do it when Rodon and Cole return, and that also puts Heel on the block too, so that they've got ways to add depth to that bullpen. It's just going to be really, really interesting how that all shakes out if those guys are forced into the bullpen, and if Bednar is still working with a high whip, if that would affect his role. That would be my only worry with him in that regard.
Makes a lot of sense. Toronto Blue Jays, Jeff Hoffman is the closer for now. Picked up the save on Wednesday, one of his cleaner innings, not perfect, but one of his cleaner innings. People talked about last year, you know, the ratios are rough, the home runs are rough, but he got the job. They seemed to trust him all year, and they went back to him. So what are your thoughts on this Jays bullpen right now?
I mean, I was okay targeting Hoffman. Now, again, he climbed up into the 70s at the end of the main event season. I was like, whew, but that was, again, just the because of the scarcity of reliable saves or guys in a role. I'm okay with Hoffman. I would just like to see more clean outings. Varland didn't have a great outing today, but he was working on back-to-back. You know, Jimmy Garcia just can't stay healthy. So, and Tyler Rogers, his best ability is availability. He's not a closer. So, you know, I think that kind of insulates Hoffman, but he can't afford like a rough patch where he gives up like a bunch of home runs like Raisel Iglesias did last year. Then I think the hounds will be barking for him. But I'm hoping his next couple of outings are clean. He kind of settles in. You know, we all wanted him to be the closer in Philadelphia when he was there, and now he's the closer. Now we're like, who's the next guy? So we're a fickle crowd.
It's funny you mentioned that. Yeah, we are a very fickle crowd. And yeah, I had no problem targeting him either. I have a couple of shares, so I'll play that game.
He's racking up strikeouts.
That's the thing. And if you looked under the hood, like I know people love that phrase. Yeah, you have a lot of home runs last year, but a lot of his skills were still pretty good when all things were said and done. And yes, you don't want the home runs. I'm not giving him a grace period, but wasn't as bad pitching wise as he probably could have been. All right, let's get to the first just what is going on situation in baseball. The Tampa Bay Rays, you know, first off, it's quote unquote Griffin Jacks. He can't really get it done. He's been working two innings in the seventh and eighth. He's been all over the bullpen. Brian Baker's been getting some love lately. I actually watched his last save. Kind of filthy. I was actually pretty impressed with some of that stuff. Yuseta is on a rehab assignment. He should be back at the end of the month. That's kind of a, I told people, if you want like a dollar stash now, it can't hurt you type things. What are you seeing, or how do you see this Tampa Bay situation playing out? Because it's all over the board.
The one thing I will say is that the team was very forthright in the offseason. The beat writers, you know, Mark Topkin, they did more than one article saying, hey, this could be the 2022 Rays where five relievers had at least five saves, but none had 10. I mean, I put that on Reliever Recon more than once when they were sharing those articles. So I don't know if it's going to be that extreme. I think Baker has earned the right to get more save chances, especially with Clevinger on the IL and Jack struggling. It's so weird that Jack's has struggled like this with the team. Usually a guy goes to a Rays to get better, not worse. He's been the 180 of like a Robert Stevenson or any other guy that are like, oh my God, the Rays are going to fix him. And it's like, I don't know. I don't know if it's a matter of just streamlining. He's had very bad luck with his BABIP. There's things happening there. So I don't know if it's mental with him right now. I think he needs a few clean outings and lower leverage, like the other day when he did the two innings, you know, and do it. So, and I'm okay with Baker giving up that home run. He had a 3-run lead. He was attacking hitters, whatever. If a guy hits one out, no big deal. Solo home runs don't beat you. Two walks and a home run, and then we're in trouble. So yeah, I picked up Baker shares 2 weeks ago on the cheap, just thinking, well, maybe we'll see something here. And I'll give credit to Mike Carter, because he talked about him on the baseball HQ live stream for the Labor Weekend, as we all had to pick a guy from a division, and he picked Baker on the Rays, and so far he's been dead on.
The good doctor, he is a sharp one. That is very, very true. The Baltimore Orioles, Ryan Helsley, he's looked actually pretty good for the most part. He has a couple walk issues here and there, so I'm not going to say it's perfect. He makes you sweat it a little bit, but the strikeouts are there. He's picking up the saves. Seems like he's the dude for now.
Yep. Yeah, as long as you can chew on the ratios, you're going to take – people are going to take the ratios with the saves right now. I mean, it's
100%.
You have to sacrifice something. And if a guy's giving you saves, like Bednar is too, you're going to be like, okay, I'll chew on the whip, and then we'll figure out stuff as it goes. But, yeah, you know, again, see, he's – the weird thing with him is his fastball's doing okay, and he's almost relying on it too much. He talked about that splitter – and it seems like he's lost the feel on his other two pitches, the slider and the curve. So I don't know, like his secondary pitches the other day got zero whiffs. So that's what I'm keeping an eye on, is he's got to be able to get whiffs with something besides his fastball.
Yep. Nope. I'm with you on that one. I have a few Helsley shares because he was kind of one of the cheaper guys that I felt comfortable in his job. So we're rolling with the whips. As you said, I need all the saves we could get. Let's go to the AL Central. One of my favorite targets, if I was spending up, is Cade Smith. I talked about it in the offseason, Greg. If you just look at every other peripheral stat, strikeout skills, swings and misses, you name it, he's basically this very similar to Mason Miller, is what I compare things to. Now, given Mason Miller is a freak, he's in a different world. But statistics that you accumulate, Cade Smith's right there with him. So I got no complaints unless you have something else in Cleveland.
No, he's a streaky cat. So he had that little blip on the road there. People were panicking already. I remember last year during the fantasy playoffs, people on the Discord were like, what am I going to do with Cade Smith? I'm like, no, do not drop Cade Smith. And the guy wrote back later. He's like, thank God I listened to you, because then he went on that tear, like getting a save almost every day. You know, we'll take the little bumps in the road. He was having problems. His fastball placement has been perfect. He's best when it's up and into a righty and up and away from a lefty. He's working there. So once it gets there, but his last outing was very efficient. 10 pitches, three whiffs, and he got the win with the two strikeouts. So I think we're going to see Cade Smith start to show you who you drafted is what you're going to get.
Beautiful. All right, let's go to the Chicago White Sox, where they kind of, I don't know if a surprise is the right word, but went and signed Sir Anthony Dominguez. He's in line to close. Grant Taylor's been opening games, which was another thing. Jordan Hicks is there. We know that can be a roller. They have a lot going on with the White Sox. So, like, weirdly enough, it feels like Sir Anthony's rather safe in that bullpen. Nothing safe, though. So what are your thoughts on the White Sox pen?
Well, if they're going to keep using Taylor as an opener, one request, if you're going to keep using him as an opener, start letting him do multiple innings so we can at least get some strikeouts out of him. I mean, people were taking Taylor, maybe not because he was going to be the closer, but if I could get like five ancillary saves and he's going to rack up, if he's going to try and get near 100 innings and rack up a bunch of strikeouts, then I can take it. I can stream him in as a third reliever, and it's cool. I'm happy with that. The fact that they're using him as an opener on like back-to-back, his last three outings have all been as an opener. So it's frustrating. So I keep being stubborn and leaving him in the hierarchies and the closer charts. And people are like, what are you thinking? And I'm like, I'm thinking he could be the best leverage reliever on his team if they would let him be. I just don't know. So I think we're getting to a point, especially when May hits, if he's not doing multiple innings by May, then what are we doing here? Then just leave him as a reliever and give up this being a starter next year bit. We got to start seeing traction there. Sir Anthony, what worries me about Sir Anthony is the walk rate. And last year he had a 1.7 whip against lefties. So we haven't really seen him face like heavy lefty matchups yet, but that could be a source of trouble if that type of level of traffic repeats itself.
Just, I guess, for curiosity's sake, if they keep opening with Taylor, who do you think takes the gig? Is it really Jordan Hicks?
I hope if Sir Anthony flounders and they don't move Taylor, I don't know what they're going to do.
Yeah,
they gave up Peyton Payette in the Rule 5 draft. Yeah. I mean, there's a couple of guys down below that might be able to. I know there's a kid AAA last year that they were high on. It might come to something like that, or they've already moved Newcomb out of pitching into a relief role, which I thought he was best suited for anyways. That could turn into a whole mess like it was last year, and that means we'll put them on the do not fly list.
Yeah, do not fly list is probably safe, because I took a lot of Mike Vassil in DC's hoping I'd get some love there, and obviously that's not happening now that he's having surgery or had surgery already. Kansas City Royals, Estevez has been kind of a fade all draft season for many reasons. He's also hurt now. Lucas Hirsig is getting the saves. I've always been a Lucas Hirsig fan, but, you know, he has his roller coasters, but for the most part, pretty effective. Matt Strom has been proven he can pitch in the back end if needed. Is it Hirsig's world that we're living in, or do you see a situation where Strom takes him, or do they, God forbid, give Estevez the job back when he comes back from the IL?
Well, when he comes back, I think you're going to see him pitch in like the sixth inning, seventh inning. And then if we see the velocity tick up and he's starting to get some swings and misses, then they'll keep moving him back into it. Now, he's working on a player option, so they don't have to be married to Estevez. It's not like he's vested for next year yet. It's a mutual option. So they can be like, don't call us, we'll call you as far as your contract. So we just have to see. It's such a weird. And remember, last year, everybody in March was taking Hirsig, saying skills over role. And now we've got Hirsig in there. And now we're still talking about Estevez, but we just don't know what Quatrall is going to do. But his velocities were abysmal. It was it's okay to be a couple of ticks down, but when you're sitting 6 miles per hour below, you know, okay, he went from 98 to 95, 96. Okay, I can live with that. But now we're going from 96 to 89 to 90. Now we're in a danger zone. He got to lay with a lot of weak contact in the spring. I watched a lot of his outings closely. I don't know. He doesn't trust that fastball.
Doesn't trust the fastball with that velocity. It feels like there might be something else going on there, is what I'll say. So
yeah, I think if you drafted Ursegg or stashed him, you're happy and you just ride it until Quatrall makes a weird decision.
Yep. Tigers, we knew when they brought Finnegan back, and then they signed Kinley, and they're like, oh, there's going to be chances for everybody, but we kind of figured it was Kinley. It's been Kinley so far, but Kinley is not getting used that often. It's mainly Will Vest and Kyle Finnegan in the back of that pen, and even some Horton as well. So it's kind of a weird situation, I guess, Greg. So how would you approach this Detroit world? Because Vest and Finnegan actually are available on a lot of waiver wires if you want to roll dice, I guess.
The funny thing is Kenley kind of told the Angels, he's like, I don't want to pitch unless it's a save situation. And now all of a sudden the Tigers are kind of like, okay, we'll kind of do that too. I know Hinch kind of hinted that they would let Kenley be the closer until he passed Lee Smith for third all time. So he needs one to tie, two to pass him. And then after that, we don't know if Hinch is going to go back to the fluid roles. You know, Vest had a couple of rocky outings, but looks like he's dialing back in. The beat writer, Evan Petzold, who's had me on his broadcast, podcast a couple of times. He's a really nice guy. He wrote an article saying that he thought Vest by the end of the year would lead the team in saves. So if you're tired of all of the mixed mash on the weekend and you just want to toss a buck towards Vest, you can always take a shot at it and then wait and see what happens after Jansen gets that the record-breaking save.
Nice. That's something I might have to do because I am hurting for saves in a specific league already. I know it's weird to say that, but when Griffin Jacks is your RP2, that's not good. Minnesota Twins, this is another one. Like people were all in the Cole Sands business, and that seems like it could be an option. Justin Topa got the recent save. They've had a lot of ins and outs of the back, like three innings of their games. Mm-hmm. There's really no consistency. So I guess if you had to approach the Twins bullpen for fantasy, how would you approach it?
Abstinence. Like I had a teenage daughter.
It feels like Baldelli's still there, but he's not. It's like the ghost of Baldelli.
Yeah, they've got, three saves by three different relievers. Now, again, Bobby Nightingale, I subscribed to all these papers so I can read the beat writers. He did have a quote saying that Cole Sands is the highest leverage reliever. So they're going to use him when they need him the most, whether it's the seventh inning, the eighth inning, or if it's a save chance. So the Sunday save tax took a lot of people's fab money. And I've had trepidation about adding any Twins reliever. I mean, even when the first Steamer run had Taylor Rogers getting 20-something saves, I was like, hell no. Yeah. So I never did my projections with that high of a number for him. Yeah, I would leave this for now. If they bring up like a guy later in the year, like Marco Raya, or they transition David Festa into a reliever when he rehabs or something like that, then I might be interested. But the current amalgamation of relievers, that somebody else can have the headache.
Yeah, Festa's a guy I am interested in early in the offseason. Like, maybe Taj Bradley. Well, Taj Bradley's actually working out in the rotation right now. So I guess I was wrong on that one for now, but we shall see. Let's head to the AL West, the Houston Astros. You mentioned it earlier, like Josh Hader maybe faces live hitters next week. That keeps, like, feels like it's getting pushed back every time we talk about it.
Brian Abreu. He touched 90 in a bullpen session, Bubba.
Man, that's not what you want to hear. Brian Abreu, he's been rocky, to say the least. How are you, again?
Another guy that does not trust his fastball right now. He's only down like 2 miles per hour, but he will not throw it in the strike zone. And what was it the other day? The one strike he threw, it got knocked out of the park. So I guess we know why he doesn't want to throw it in the strike zone. Is it he can't handle the ninth inning? Because even last year when he got the save chances down the stretch, he wasn't a lockdown like closer. If you look back at the numbers when Hader went on the IL, it wasn't like Abreu took over like Smith did and was just nails. It was there was a lot of high whip outings and elevated pitch counts. And I don't know. It's like, does he just nibble too much in that, in the ninth inning? Like in the eighth inning, it seems like he's a different animal. So we just don't know. Is he just an eighth inning guy? And there's nothing wrong with that. Guys can have great careers being the eighth inning guy. Ask Chris Martin. But, you know, that I don't trust Abreu right now. So Brian King was in our, you know, I made him a late ad in the Fantasy Fab. And that's the hardest thing. Like that article usually publishes around 3 or 4 in the afternoon. And then I go back in at like 8 o'clock Eastern time and tweak it. And I added them into the list being it's like, okay, I watched that Abreu thing. If you're desperate for saves, put a few bucks on Brian King and see what happens. So he got added in a few leagues, not all of them. And Dom Rello had that too. He was DMing me. He's like, okay, is King a must add? I'm like, if you need him, yes. So that's the advantage of the old DMs.
Yeah, no, I threw him in my Fab article this week. It was like, I wouldn't go crazy, but if Abreu continues to struggle, like King's obviously the next man up. So And Abreu has not looked great, so struggles would not surprise me. At the same time,
really nobody in that bullpen is looking very good outside of King. And like, can they even get a game to him? That's the biggest struggle.
They just got swept by the Rockies, so that says everything you need to know. All right, the Athletics. I kind of have a feeling this answer might be similar to the Twins, but with the A's, you know, everyone wanted Mark Leiter Jr. That obviously did not work. Then there's the Hogan Harris. He's the only lefty in the bullpen. Then there's Justin Sterner, who basically pitches the sixth or seventh most nights. Mm-hmm. So, again, if you had to or if you wanted to, how would you approach Sacramento?
You can play the lottery and just put a dollar on Elvis Alvarado and see what happens. There's worse things in the world than, I mean, he had a good save during the WBC and he bailed the team out in the 10th inning the other day. He came in with bases loaded and got out of it. And then they had the walk off against Abreu. So, hey, you know, Leiter Jr. is, you know, he's like a taxi. He'll get you to where you need to go, but it's not going to be flashy. That's going to be bumpy. Sometimes you're going to feel all of the wear and tear, and that's where we are. He can get you a few saves, but he's just not built for facing the best hitters all the time in those highest leverage moments. And he was nibbling in New York and it came back to bite him. And that game was so weird. It's like you had two lefties leading off that inning. It seemed like that was the perfect time for Hogan Harris, and he doesn't use them. But he'll use them in a two inning outing in some other game. And you're like, there's no rhyme or reason to that bullpen. So yes, you can abstain, or like I said, you can take a dollar flyer on Elvis Alvarado and see what happens. At least he throws hard. He may not know where it's going all the damn time, but he throws hard.
Yep. He does throw really hard. So I like that call quite a bit, actually. The Mariners, Andrés Muñoz, it's his world, it feels like.
Yeah, and he's upped his velocity this year. I was kind of like, I was a little nervous about him because his velocity dipped at the end of last year and being in the playoffs and all that, but he's come out firing the ball. So either he's feeling great, or, you know, maybe that back is fully healed, you know. But, yeah, he's looked dominant, so go get him.
All right, Jordan Romano, this was the big fab target when Kirby Yates' knee injury went down. Kirby Yates threw a bullpen. Didn't fully like how his legs felt in that one, but they're they're starting to get him to rehabbing, so that's coming real soon. Romano's actually looked really good for like when he's in the back of the pen. We've seen this before. We know
he did for 2 weeks in Philly last year too.
We've seen the other shoe drop.
We're all patting ourselves on the back. Oh, I picked up Romano for next to nothing, and I just got six saves, and then the walls closed in.
So then that leads to my question: what would you do? Obviously, you ride Romano while you can, but
yeah,
do you still hold Yates, or how do you go about this?
Yeah, well, if you have Romano, it's the rodeo ride. You stay on the bull till he knocks you off. You know? So if he's getting saves, then okay, I'll take the saves. And then once he knocks you down and has a couple of rough outings, and all of a sudden he's getting all sweaty and looking nervous, then it's like, okay, I got to move on to the next guy. So if Yates is healthy, it's him. I think they'll start working in Joyce. So I think this bullpen's far from settled. I just don't see Romano getting 30 saves this year. If he does, God bless him. And the people who got him, that's your Emilio Pagan this year. But I'm kind of waiting for the other shoe to drop.
Yep.
It's terrible to say, but I'm like,
I'm with you. That's why I didn't like break the bank for him like others did. Like I put bids in where I needed saves, and like Fad Kirby Yates, I was kind of aggressive, but I'm also like, man, we've seen this before. Like, is this really happening?
The only positive I can see with Yates is, you know, that's Maddox's guy from his time in Texas together. So as well as Romano's pitching, you could see Maddox being like, yeah, but Yates is my boy. So we don't know. He would probably have to earn the ninth inning, but if Romano struggles and Yates is back and feeling healthy, then you can see the switch, and then they can work in Joyce without overworking him to get him ready for next year. So when all those storms meet, that's where it's really going to start showing us a little clarity on what their plan is.
Very true. All right, let's wrap up the American League with the Texas Rangers. You had made the Chris Martin joke earlier, which I appreciated. Jacob Junis saves in back-to-back games. Cole Wynn picked up a save on Wednesday because Junis had worked back-to-back games. Are we really going to go fab crazy this weekend on Jacob Junis?
I'm sure what I recommend won't win them. And I have nothing against Jacob Junis. He had one save coming into this year. He's already got two. So he's doubled his prior career output in 2 days. When I'm doing all this stuff, the things I'm looking at is strike percentage. We want usually above 65%. 67 to 70 is better because then we know the guy's throwing strikes and not walking the world. We're looking for swinging strike percentages at 15% or higher. I usually want contact low 70s and below contact percentage allowed. And, you know, we're trying to look at some of these things. Now, Junis does fill up the strike zone. There's no question there. But his swinging strike percentage, I believe, is at like, it's either 7.5 or 8.3 after his last outing. And his contact rate is over 80%. So, you know, there's going to be days. There's no way he can maintain a BABIP below 150. That's just not going to happen. His career rate's 300 or higher. So migration to the mean's coming. We just don't know in what manner it's going to be or how ugly it'll be. You know, I really think he's a very good setup reliever, and sometimes he can do the multiple innings. I think Texas is still trying to figure out what they've got here. Now, nice thing is today Chris Martin was in the sixth inning.
Yeah.
So it looks like he's no longer a cold closer. Robert Garcia on rest wasn't even used. They used Luis Crivello for two innings, and then they went to Colwin in the ninth. So I think this is one of those situations where if everybody's cranking out money on Junis, you can put low bids on Colwin and Jacob Laps, and then you might be able to steal some ancillary saves, or one of them might end up walking away with that role. Jacob Laps hasn't given up a hit in 28 batters face this year. And Colwin probably has much better swing and miss stuff than Junis does. So take that for what it's worth.
Beautiful. I love it because I've always been a little bit of a Lats fan when he was spot starting last year. Didn't know much about Colwin.
The beat writers love him. Evan Grant loves Jacob Lats. Fact that I think he's doing whatever they want. You want one inning, I'll give you one inning. You want two innings, I'll give you two innings. So there might be days where he gets like a two inning save and then he needs like 2 days off, but you can take it if he's helping your ratios. And even a co-closer with good ratios, there's a lot of value to that this year.
A lot of value.
So if him and Wynn end up being co-closers eventually, I think people can tolerate it. And it's, you know, you can use him as your third reliever on weeks you need him. And then there's weeks you might not want to have him active, and you can just leave him out. You can leave him out. But knowing that you have that as a safety net is helpful.
Definitely. All right, let's head to the National League. The Atlanta Braves, Raisel Iglesias. It's his role for now. You still always have Suarez just sitting there in the wings waiting to pounce, it feels like. Are you how confident are you in Raisel keeping the job, I guess, is the question.
He's looked good so far, and he's no longer using that slider, which is what fueled his awful spell, that little batch last year. We gave up six home runs in that small sample. So, hey, I you know, Raisel is kind of kicking all of the doubters to the curb here. He's, you know, he was efficient last night too. He threw 1.2 innings in less pitches than it took Suarez to get one inning done. So
true. Yeah, and Iglesias, you know, he was the weird one. Like in the last 2 weeks of draft season, his ADP was actually falling. I could not figure that one out at all. Miami Marlins
pickle.
Yeah, true. Miami Marlins.
He's such a great guy. For 1 second, before my first main event, he took time out of his day. My girlfriend was getting a colonoscopy, and I was waiting for her in the waiting room. He talked to me on the phone for an hour about how to strategize for the main event. Wow. He didn't have to do that. He took time out of his day. We talked on the phone. We were having a great conversation, and it kind of gave me a good idea of how I wanted to approach my draft because I'd never done it before. I was like, I'm nervous about it. You know, this is a big thing. I was like, I just don't have the experience you do. And again, he gave me an hour. You know, an hour out of your day is a lot.
That is a lot. That is definitely a lot because time is valuable to a lot of people. So pretty cool stuff to hear that. Tampa Bay Rays, Pete Fairbanks' wife is having a child right now. Maybe he already had the child. He's on the paternity list, so he'll be back in the next day or two.
Thank God.
It's pretty much his job, except for certain travels arrangements, apparently, probably. Anything else you have on that?
Yeah, they tried to poo-poo that they would use him at the highest leverage moment sometimes, and that has not come to fruition. And anybody who watched Bender and Fauché try and close that game the other day understands why.
Yes, 100%. New York Mets, I've been a Devin Williams fan for a long time. I was kind of bummed how the Yankees deal went. I was all about Gillen back in, and he's looked pretty good to start the season in Queens. What are your thoughts on the Mets situation? Luke Weaver picked up the win on Tuesday, so he's still hanging around and very qualified as well.
I mean, Williams is the GM's guy. That's Stearns' guy. He would have to implode for them to go to Weaver or somebody else. Now, they do have some good young arms at AAA, but I think those guys would be coming up to give them depth when they're tired of watching Luis Garcia and some other people pitch.
All right, let's talk to the Washington Nationals. Clayton Beter has been getting the chances in the ninth. He blew a save a few days ago, but the rest of the pen, I guess, hasn't been world beaters. Cole Henry's looked pretty good, but he got kind of hit around here in the ninth in a non-save situation on Wednesday. What's your thoughts on the Nats bullpen?
Beter has the save, but he also has 3 strikeouts against 4 walks. I don't trust his fastball command. And I talked to you about the things I'm looking for, and command is one of those main ones. I don't know if you were at the presentation at First Pitch when Doug and I were up there and we did the trust tree thing. I can't put Beter in the trust tree. I just don't trust him. I pray that, and it's nothing against Jarlin Susanna because I know he probably wants to be a starting pitcher, but he would be the best reliever on this team right now if he was healthy. If he can rehab and get that nasty 2-pitch arsenal up into the majors, there's still a chance he could lead this team in saves if they transition him into a relief role.
That could be interesting. It'd be nice if they get it because they need somebody to lock into that pen because Beter's getting the work, but it's like you said, it's not very pretty right now. And some of us are still having to rely on them because that's the world we live in right now.
And another crazy one, if you're in like a deep keeper or AL only or whatever, it sounds like the Guardians are putting Espino into a relief role. He could be high octane stuff in like the 7th or 8th inning by the midpoint of the season. If you're in a Souls league, that could be gold. Because that kid can rack up strikeouts. Getting someone like him in front of Smith would be phenomenal.
Good call. Good call on that one. Philadelphia Phillies, it's Johan Duran. I have nothing else to say there.
I love the Durantula.
Yes, Durantula is awesome. They gave him the
I had him rated high very early, and people are like, what are you doing? I'm like, come on. Thompson's not going to play games with this kid.
No.
You got a stud back there. There's no more floating closer BS.
Yeah, like I always said with him, I said skills, he's a top 5 closer. The Twins with Baldelli make it complicated. He's not there anymore. So let's go. NL Central, Chicago Cubs. I love Daniel Palencia. I know he can be a wild card from time to time, but I love Daniel Palencia.
Yeah, I was wrong. I was worried about him with the contact rates at the end of the season last year and the shoulder issue sidelining him. But once I saw him in the WBC, I changed all of my save projections. I don't know if you tracked him, I was like 22, 23. Then I watched him in WBC and I jumped him up to 28. I'm like, okay, I've seen enough. He got the biggest bump in ADP of anybody, but it was warranted by his performance.
his auction price kept doing that same bump as well, which was annoying.
Yeah, every one of those WBC owners, you just add another dollar or two.
Yep. Yeah, my early shares were great. Didn't get many late, unfortunately. Cincinnati Reds, Emilio Pagan picking up where he left off. He has three saves and a win in four of the last 5 days. He's been very effective so far, which is just crazy to still think about.
Just keep an eye on that whip, and he's another guy working at lower velocity this year. I think the wear and tear from last year, I don't know if there'll be an IL stint, but if you have Pagan, I don't think a dollar or two bid on Santillan is a bad idea.
All right. The Milwaukee Brewers was the whole offseason. It was Miguel Uribe. Miguel Uribe, who's it going to be? Who's it going to be? It's clearly Miguel right now. I say for now, because obviously things are subject to change, maybe a trade or whatever. But Miguel's gotten the job done. The eighth, ninth inning, it's been the same protocol pretty much every time. So are we still holding Uribe, I guess, would be the question?
In a 12-teamer, no. In saves only. In a 15-teamer, you can probably, based on the draft capital, you're probably going to be a little more patient. But if we get to May and it's still McGill, you're probably going to have to cut bait and move on. It's just going to be funny because then it's like once you give up on him, then McGill is going to have an injury setback, and then everybody's going to be fabbing the death out of Uribe.
Never fails. Never, ever fails. Pittsburgh Pirates, one of the big fab ads this last week was Gregory Soto. He's been great. I'm not going to knock it whatsoever. His ratios, his strikeouts, he's getting saves. Santana's still getting ninth inning work as well, so it's not like it's a one-man show. They said before the season it wasn't going to be a one-man show. So I guess how
like the day before the season started.
Yeah. After we've all been drafting Santana. Agreed. Yes, 100%. Great, great way there. But I'm still keeping my Santana shares, but I still wouldn't mind Soto shares elsewhere. Like, I'm not opposed to it. I guess how would you approach them for fantasy?
No, you could have worse things than those two relievers active in your lineup. You know, Santana's got two wins already. It's just the terrific irony of all of this game that we love, that people were willing to spend $300 on Soto this weekend in an NFBC contest, and his last two appearances have been in the eighth inning. Now, the second one was against the Padres 9-1-2 hitters, and same thing. Just like Chapman warming up today for the top of the Brewers lineup, there's going to be games where that's what they're asked to do to win the game. And if they've bought into it, that's fine. But Soto's racking up strikeouts, so he's still giving you value there. And if you get a save a week, you're not going to complain. Not in this environment.
And
think you're getting 30. You know, you just have to be reasonable about these things.
You're hoping to get 20 at most for either one, if not both, if you're lucky.
If they both get 16, you're happy as pie.
Yes, 100%. And Soto is going to be the high leverage guy flat out. So like you said, there'll be weeks where he gets more saves and he doesn't. There'll be other weeks where he doesn't sniff the ninth. And that's just the reality of the situation. We'll wrap up the Central with the St. Louis Cardinals. Riley O'Brien has taken hold of this bullpen. It looks like he's been the only one that survived because the rest of them have pretty much all tanked. Jojo Romero's been, I guess, okay. Stanek, not great. O'Brien even looked good in a non-save on Wednesday. Are we rolling with O'Brien, or is there still someone else we should keep an eye on?
No, it's kind of been he's distanced himself from the pack. My early season love of Matt Svensson has evaporated very, very quickly. His sinker has been getting lit up. So, hey, Riley's the guy. So, again, just the rodeo ride. You just get on there. Now, there will be outings. He struggles with command, but he's been very effective and is not recording a save in three of his last four appearances.
Agreed. All right. I'm going to sit back and take notes on this one because it's extremely frustrating watching. Like, the Giants are winning games right now. They won two in a row, so that's a big deal for us. But the bullpen situation, we mentioned Ryan Walker pitches after Robbie Ray. Caleb Killian is a popular discussion point. I think Keaton Wynn is still very good as well. It rotates around in the bullpen, and I don't know if that's going to change anytime soon is the problem. So what's your thoughts in San Francisco?
Like, I guess we can get saves from Ryan Walker as long as Robbie Ray's not the starter.
So, yeah, maybe.
That could be since he seems to be in love with bringing him in after Robbie Ray. That's two times in a row for those scoring at home. You know, Keaton Wynn and Killian are both interesting, but they're brand new to high leverage. So there's going to be days where they look like filthy. And like, I remember there was a day where Keaton Wynn was all over the pitching ninja things and he's got all of the stuff. And it's like, oh my God. And then the next game, I think he gave up three earned runs. You just have to take it with a grain of salt. You know, I think Walker people have to be patient, but you also have to keep an eye on how Keaton and how Caleb Killian and Keaton Wynn are used in the next couple of weeks. Hopefully by May, we have a much better idea about how Vitello is going to run his bullpen. I just don't know if he's trying to do the Baldelli smartest guy in the room thing. He did say he was going to use matchups at times. So again, I will give him credit in the preseason. He was like, it's Walker. I like Walker, but there will be times where I play matchups and he won't be in the ninth inning. So he did warn us. I just didn't know it was going to be this extreme. So
yeah,
I have a couple of Walker shares in MEQs. Yeah. So it wasn't just, you know, the regular Joe getting him. I took him in a couple spots because the price seemed right and that bullpen seemed bereft of talent to challenge him. And I did like Killian's spike in velocity in the spring, and we were watching Keaton win. But, you know, we'll see how all that shakes out. The biggest disappointment has been Eric Miller. He's just been I think the team's just counting the days till Henkes can replace him. Yeah. And Peguero will be back soon, too. I think they're both rehabbing. Peguero will be back
very soon, yes. And I have some Walker shares as well. Same reasons you said. It's like I looked at that pin, and I'm like, there's no one else here. that's gonna threaten it. But one thing you said there when you're talking about Vitello, he's doing it with the lineup, too. It feels like he's trying to see what really works right now. Mm-hmm. It's like a shiny new toy, and he's trying to figure out what's the best way to go about it. And I hope you're right, and we get a better idea come May. But he might run matchups too, which again, it's probably good for real baseball, but for us, it's a pain. So
it's hard. I mean, it's hard to be a first year manager.
The spotlight is large and bright on that one. All right, Dodgers, Edwin Diaz. Anything else?
No.
Yeah. Colorado Rockies. If you're interested in Colorado Rockies, Victor Vodnik is kind of the guy, but they have a lot of other maybe guys, I guess. Because Vodnik has a save, Justin Mejia has a save, and then Antonio Senzatella had a multi-inning save. So how would you approach this bullpen if you are gutsy enough to do so?
The hardest thing about the Rockies is they usually win most their games at home, which is when their relievers are at the most risk for ratios.
True.
So, you know, we'll chew on a two whip from Bednar and a higher whip from Helsley's been whittling it down. We'll chew on a whip from those guys because I know they've already got nine saves between them. Vodnik's got one save, and he's always a risk to walk the bases loaded and then try and wriggle out of it. So I don't. Was it Matt Davis with the? I don't think the oranges the juice is worth the squeeze. If somebody comes out of this bullpen and emerges, maybe, but I don't know. I have no faith in any of them right now.
Yep. No, I'm with you on that one. Padres, it's Mason Miller and everybody else. So that's totally fine. Last but not least.
His strikeout percentage is over 70% right now.
He's a freak. He's an absolute freak. I know the A's got some young talent back. I get it, but. Like you have a unicorn on your hands here.
Do you remember at the first pitch when people panned me when I had him on my closer charts like 3 years ago? They're like, what are you doing with Mason Miller on your closer charts?
He's a starter. Like, yeah. Well, remember this last year? They're like, whoopsie. The Padres are going to stretch him back out. No, they're not. No. You're crazy.
He's a force of nature back there. Just let him just let him do his thing.
Just unleash the beast. That's why he's got the intro. All right. Arizona Diamondbacks, to wrap things up here. You mentioned the Paul Sewald experience. That's been definitely up and down of late, but there's really not been anybody else in that bullpen that's wanted to take charge, I guess. Like, so how are we approaching Arizona?
It's Sewald until Lavulo can't take it anymore. I will say Juan Murillo has looked very good since his recall. He's got velocity. He's got the hair. You know, I'm jealous. You know, kind of a stocky guy, kind of looks like a closer. So if Sewald, and again, he's going to get runway, so I'm not advocating going out and picking up Juan Murillo, but I'm just saying if something happened and Sewald just can't do it anymore, or Lavulo's like, okay, we got to put him in lower leverage and let him figure things out, then you could see him emerge. I mean, it was always going to be Sewald was a bridge until Puck could return. And unless Puck suffers a setback, I think that's still the plan. So we're probably a week or two out before people are really going to start putting in cheap bids on puck. But again, if you're desperate and the rest of your team's healthy, there's worse ways you can spend a buck or two in the next couple of weeks than just getting him in there and hoping there's no setbacks in his rehab and he's out there either, I think, mid-May or early June. So that's he's going to be back, and he'll be back 2 months before Martinez can even get back into the into that situation. And again, there'll be times where they use puck in the eighth inning and you're going to get frustrated a little bit, but if he can rack up like 10 saves once he gets back, I think that's something everybody would be very, very happy to get.
Yeah, definitely. I've always been a big AJ Puck fan. Health would be very, very welcomed in that scenario. All right, that's all 30 teams in the books. It's man, it's going to be a crazy rest of the season. Got a couple quick listener questions from the Discord here. Greg, our buddy Ben Tidd, you kind of hit on this, but just to reiterate, he says, chances Irsig remains the KC closer all year.
65.
There you go. Our buddy Mailman Mike says, who do you think leads Tampa Bay in saves for the rest of the season?
You know what? I think Baker. It might be nine.
He's looked good.
It might be nine, but it might end up being. Now, I don't think there's anything wrong with getting Uceda, but as I said on Twitter to somebody who asked Close Monkey, I was like, if you're okay with ratios and saves on the side, then Uceda can be your guy. You know, we're on to something here. I think he's going to be the highest leverage guy. So he'll come in, and if they need him in the seventh, they'll bring him in the seventh. There will be games where he gets the ninth, and then people are going to spend. Do you remember Ronnie Henriquez last year?
Yep.
Where he would always get that Sunday save, and we're like, this is it. He's finally going to get the job. And then, whoop, there goes the football from Lucy, and I'm Charlie Brown lying on my back. I think that will be Uceda this year. He's going to rack up strikeouts. He's going to help your ratios. He's going to get you a couple of saves, but I just don't think Tampa Bay is going to make him the guy.
Gotcha. He had the same question for the Giants, but it feels like that's Ryan Walker, even though he won't be the full, maybe the
I still think guy. He'll lead the team in saves. It's just not going to be as lopsided as we projected.
Our buddy Grismania in the chat says, just a general, I guess, saves question. Are saves only leagues like dinosaurs? Are you seeing more shifts to solds leagues? Are you in favor of saves only leagues, I guess, would be another way to phrase it.
From a business standpoint, yes.
Touche.
I mean, I got to pay the bills.
Yes.
I would get a little more sleep at night. I just think because it's so entrenched that I don't see the old guard ever letting that go.
Completely agree. It's like the
now I get the appeal of solds. I mean, that was part of the reason I switched to that league and tout, just because I was like, I write about relievers, but I'm not in a solds league. This is stupid. So Jeff was kind enough to move me in there. And you know, it makes life easier. So when people were going crazy, even in our drafts, a few relievers went way ahead of where I projected them to be, because this was my second year. Now, the first year I wasn't sure. So I took them a little earlier than other people. And I was like, okay. And now I read the room. I see what happens. So I took like Whitlock in the 15th and Uribe in like the 20th rounds. I mean, that's unheard of, but those were guys I had in my top 10 for sold. So I'm like, I'm getting a top 10 solds guy at dirt cheap. I'm not going to like, I love Mason Miller, but I wasn't going to pick him in the fourth round in that league just because, and there's nothing wrong with that. Sarah Sanchez is probably smiling all about it, but I just couldn't justify it when I wanted to get hitters and pitchers when I know I can. Like last year when I won the league, I drafted three relievers and I finished the year with Keller, Pagan, and somebody else. None of them were drafted. I just kept burning and churning them. So it's a lot easier to burn and churn in souls than it is in saves.
Yep, I was in that tout league for the first like 3 years when it first formed, and then I moved to the one I'm in now. So yeah, that souls one definitely changes your approach on draft day. Aaron Gifts says, Cole Sands worth holding on to in 15 teamers. Probably, yeah. Yes.
I mean, you can hold them, just kind of see it. Like if they're playing the Yankees and somebody else, just keep them on the bench. You're just hoping you're managing their matchups and hoping that he's not stuck pitching in the seventh inning. So as a third reliever, when you want to stream him, you can, but that's his upside. He's never going to be like a guy you can use as your RP2. There's just not enough volume, and he's not in a in an assured role.
And then Adam Brunchen, we already answered. He basically picked all five of like the tough bullpens and said pick one or the other. So we hit on all of those already on the show.
It is your team.
Yeah, exactly.
I can give you so much info. You know, I can give away so much, but it's like,
yeah, exactly.
You know, like I said, it, for me, the biggest wild card in all of that, of all those messes, would be Alvarado. I just don't know if the Athletics would give him the runway. Okay. Like, he's somebody that could come in there, and again, there's going to be tough outings, but I think he has enough velocity, if he could hone his command just a little bit, that he could at least be a presence in the ninth inning when that team wants him to be there.
Yes, indeed. The A's could use some stability in their life since they are moving shortly anyways. All right. We're going to wrap it up there, Greg. Always a great time chatting. Before we head out of here, remind everybody where they can find you and what you got going on all over the place.
Okay. Reliever Recon, as our friend Bubba here mentioned, I mean, if you go to Starbucks and spend $5 on a coffee, you can get all of our content for a month for that same price. In this economy, that's a bargain, kids. There's content every day, probably more than you want to consume. We do fab content for NFBC specific, but you can also apply that to your home leagues if you so choose. And you get the access to the charts where you see things happening and pitchers moved around in the hierarchies in real time. Closer Monkey, I do updates there daily. I update the charts. Again, if you want to chew through Google ads, I appreciate you. That's what keeps the lights on at Closer Monkey. We've had a lot more support this year, not only on Twitter, but in the post being read every day. So that's cool. I don't know why you wouldn't. If you can get what I do at The Athletic once a week for Google ads, why not? And again, The Athletic, those articles usually they post on Thursdays. And I do tiered rankings for saves and solds in there for our subscribers. And then the Baseball HQ column debuts this Friday. That is the lineups outlook. I just kind of look at guys that are either rising or falling in value based on where they're being used by their managers as the season progresses. So it's, again, that's such a breath of fresh air to look at hitters.
Oh, I bet.
Like, oh, there are hitters.
Yeah, you probably just like to even look at starting pitchers once in a while.
I do. It's fun. Yeah. I missed that a little bit when I used to do that fantasy alarm. I had to cover everything, but it's I like my little niche, but it's, you know, it's what was it this past Sunday when there was 11 reliever wins and 12 saves on Easter? It was a little overwhelming. I was just like, no pun intended. I was on eggshells all day. I'm like, it was just, and I'm trying to get the fab stuff. I was like, there's days like that where it's just an avalanche and you're like, oh my God, I went to bed and I was just like frazzled.
Yep, that is a lot going on indeed. But make sure you guys check out all of Greg's work. It is great stuff and a must for your fantasy baseball needs. Greg, thanks for joining me, man. I appreciate it. We'll have to chat again sometime, if not this season, in Arizona, hopefully.
So, yes. Sure. Someday I'll get a job where I can come out there and golf with you guys.
Oh, man, that'd be
great. Even if his ed teacher makes life difficult in New York.
Yeah, your schedule's a little tricky. You're in, you're out.
Yeah, I plan on being out there again this year. I had to take that 1 year hiatus, but we're good to go.
Sounds good. I look forward to seeing you then. But for now, everybody, this was Benched with Bubba, episode 845, talking bullpens with Greg Jewett. Catch y'all next time.